give up in us.
Welcome to the Living with Heart podcast with Dr. Chip Dodd. Before we get started, Dr. Chip Dodd, we need to do a correction from the previous episode. I mistakenly said that the process is on page 26 of the first edition of The Voice of the Heart, which since I have gone and gotten my old copy, it is on page 27. So I just wanted, for all the listeners there, I just, you know, I want them
to
know
that. You remember what was in it, though.
And it's all on the same page. I'm holding it in front of you. It happens to just, you know, it's page 26 and 27 together, but it's on page 27, not page 26.
So you were there.
How does it make you feel knowing that that page impacted me so much? I actually remember the page number.
Honestly, really glad and some really good, humble shame. You know, the good kind of shame. And it's honored. Like it's worth it.
Yeah.
And the number of, after the one.
The number of times in counseling conversations over the last dozen years, I pointed people to page 27. Is too many to count.
I'm gonna
read it because we're in the process. We're in the middle of talking about the process.
This is how we enter the process.
Right? Yeah, we're gonna talk about life in the river, which is one of my favorite analogies, illustrations, prophetic visions that I feel like you give. But just to root us back into season two, we got renewed. That's very exciting. Renewed for season two. The people deciding the renewal were you and me, but the committee met and we
the board, the executives met. And they renewed our season number two.
We have renewed ourselves.
I bet we could do season three too. It's almost a lot.
Yeah. Okay. Page 27. This is about the process, which is what season two is all about. You're talking about the solution to. You say, how do we start to nourish the roots that give us full life? The solution is threefold. First, we begin by feeling our feelings and exposing our hearts, thereby awakening our emotional and spiritual needs, desires, longings, and hope. Second, we tell the truth about what is happening inside us. By acknowledging the content of our hearts, we expose how hungry we are for the vulnerable and authentic life of fullness. In doing so, we begin stepping into the light of freedom. Third, living out of our rediscovered freedom, we begin to grow more, recognizing our innate craving for full life and our inability to control it. In letting go of control, we ultimately find that God is doing for us what we in our powerlessness cannot do.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's good.
You know what? That's old.
Mm-hmm. When did you write that?
That's 99.
No, that's a, when did Voice of the Heart come out? 99?
2000.
Oh, I thought it was even earlier than that. Uh-huh. Okay.
But see, what thing was.
I also think 99 was like 2 years ago. And
it's the 1900s.
Yeah, that's a long time ago.
That is 25 years ago. And that teaching was already being done. And there's a, you know, like you said, I've showed you that there's an, in fact, there's an, your friend Michael, our friend Michael, has it on MP3.
Yep.
We need to take sections of that sometime, play it. So integrate this is it. That's 33 years old.
Wow.
My point isn't how old it is. My point is that it's still the same.
Yep.
And it's still true and it still works.
Yeah.
That's to me is hugely significant. And I want you to know that we got to remember, please, for anybody listening, go to my website, chipdodd.com. And go to the resources and please download the free resource, the feelings chart, but also the amazing gift of feelings and feelings as tools, because we're talking about this mantra, feel your feelings, tell the truth about them, and then give it to the process. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people are still back there with, how do I get my feelings? How do I find them? How do I know they're true? What do I do about that? So instead of going into it, go to the website, download it's three sheets of paper, the amazing gift of feelings, feelings as tools, because it talks about feelings as passwords, lanterns, and keys that unlock us. And also the method of finding the feelings, you identify them, you explore them, and you express them.
Yep.
And so that's another way of saying, feel your feelings, tell the truth, give it the process. But those are some tools that you have to... You know, you have to take a lot of swings to learn how to hit, right?
Yeah.
You have to do a lot of work to be able to take it to the field.
Yep.
You got to prepare. And this is no different. And you really do get out of it I know I'm going to say a cliche, you get out of it what you put into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've used this analogy before. I use it teaching this last week. You just have to do it too. You know, it's like if you're simply acquiring the vocabulary of this.
Yes.
You're
still in your head.
Right, exactly. Right. As opposed to actually doing this. I've used the illustration before, but always I feel like it usually lands of it's like a board game. You can talk about the rules of the board game, but until you actually play a few rounds, that's not then you're actually you're actually experiencing it.
Then it genuinely becomes a return to intuitive.
Yes.
A return to being natural.
Right.
A return to actually, believe it or not, knowing what to say, when to say it, and kind of like how to say it.
Yeah.
That is a big deal. And you know, that knowing when, knowing how kind of thing, mm-hmm. it really does to give a person a sense of confidence.
Right.
And a sense of competence.
Mm-hmm.
And it also daily renews their courage through remembering where it does work and who to go to get help with it.
Yeah.
And it unfolds a person's curiosity.
Mm.
Those are four big things that you come into life, we talked about. You come into life looking mm-hmm. who's looking for you so they can show you, teach you, train you how to live. And then you can go move towards these great expectations by knowing also how to grieve when you don't get there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, courage, curiosity, competence, and confidence are big results of feeling your feelings, telling the truth, and being able to live in the process while keeping those four C things alive are big deals.
Yeah. And I feel like that's a big emphasis for season two is like, we're not as much as we, you know, in a podcast environment, you can only, this isn't group work. So it's like, we still are hitting up against the limitations of words and talking about something. Mm-hmm. Maybe the impetus here is to catalyze people as much as possible to actually integrate this into daily living.
Yes. And that's how come I keep going back. And we, you know what, as we do the process, let's make sure that we talk about the sort of like the discipline of restoration or the discipline of freedom that we start working on in the process. We bring up the daily activity to have upon awakening that gives us opportunity to ensure that we live in the process during the day.
Do you want to talk about that now, or are you just saying punt that for later?
Well, yeah, let's wait until maybe next time. Let's get into Euphoria River as quickly as we can because we've already brought it up a couple of times. And it's really good.
Yep. Okay. So we're continuing this conversation about the process. And today we're going to talk about
the Euphoria
River.
Yeah.
We should try to, this is my mental note to say, we should try to post a picture of this in the show notes so that people can visualize this.
I would love that. And how are we going to do that? How are you going to do that?
I'll figure
how
it
are you?
I'll figure. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this will not be a team project. I'll
listen. You know, I'm the guy. I heard this great singer, and I called my son and said, "Hey, have you heard this person singing Adelaide?" And he said, "Dad, it's Adele."
Yeah.
And yes. Yeah. For over a decade. Okay. So bye. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
And Sonia and I last night went to see Johnny Swim.
I know.
All right.
Your coolness factor just went up. At the Ryman. At the Ryman.
How absolutely cool. I mean, I go all the way from Andy Williams, Moon River, all the way to Johnny Swim. Come on. Okay. But Johnny Swim, they had a song last night. It was so cool. I can't do music, but they said, do not make the mistake of not living while you're young, chasing the sun, take your hands off the brake, bicycle, and die when you're done.
Mm.
And that was those lines in that song are a call to the process. Because you're saying, if you take your hands off the brake, you can fall. If you chase the sun, you're never going to catch it, but you go after it anyway. And you live while you're young.
Yeah.
And don't in the name of protecting yourself from the denial that was imperative put upon you, that actually enslaved you while it protected you, because that which protects us will enslave us ultimately. my best self-protective mechanisms are not wrong. They're important.
Yeah.
Survival is essential, but those self-protective mechanisms will stop me from thriving.
Mm.
So, like we talked about last week, the two territories that are essential at birth have to be regrown. And if we don't regrow, then we become isolated.
Yeah.
And that means when we become isolated, I want you to, everybody to picture a river going horizontally through the middle of a page. And then there's a territory above the river and below the river. There's a north, south.
So a river with two banks.
Yeah, the river's west. The river's east to west.
Mm-hmm.
All right? East of Eden, west of glory.
Mm.
All right? So, I mean, we do live, even if you use it as an incredible metaphor like John Steinbeck, East of Eden book, mm-hmm. or you see it very literally, and I do, I both.
Yeah.
And Eden means pleasantness.
Yeah.
We live east of pleasantness.
Yeah.
And we live west of completion.
Mm.
So that means we live in a tough territory. And if we don't know how to do pain while also maintaining joy, if we don't know how to do joy, which means having a tolerance for pain, you can't live in life between east of Eden and west of completion.
Yeah.
So you picture a territory to the north and a territory to the south, and those are the territories that we attempt to live in if we're in denial or if we're dissociated.
Yep.
Because feelings are the enemy rather than feelings being the tools that allow us to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Feelings are weakness because vulnerability is considered badness. And vulnerability is, in fact, there's a guy who you're going to meet after this, Nate, who's working on a book called Unchained Leadership. And it's about the power of appropriate use, true, genuine use of vulnerability as a form of leadership and its essentiality. Mm-hmm. Because a vulnerability is a willingness to be hurt for something that's worth paying. So, and every marriage and every parent and every leader better be good at that, because if you can't be hurt, then you really can't lead, because you're not really taking risks.
Yeah.
You're just trying to control everything.
Yeah.
So anyway, what happens as soon as we get into life, little children awaken to this truth, there's no such place as away.
Yeah.
I mean, environmentalists tell us the garbage dump is the closest thing we have to going away, throwing it away. Away is a pile up. And so there's no such place to find a life. And there's no life at the garbage dump.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Leonard Cohen wrote a poem called Suzanne, and she found flowers at the dump. And I get all that. And I appreciate that. We can make good out of the bad, and we can find, make lemonade out of lemons. But at the same time, it's no place to live.
Mm.
Okay. Survival's great, but thriving's best.
Yep.
And we don't thrive at the dump.
Yep.
Okay. We're made for more. So what's amazing is euphoria, the river of life, it isn't about passivity. It's about activity.
Mm.
It's not about spectating. It's about participating.
Mm.
Okay. But we're not in control.
Yeah.
Okay. And you're bringing the desires of your heart, the neediness of your heart, the hungers of your heart, the longings of your heart, the wishes, the hopes, the dreams, and taking a risk of saying, there's somewhere down there.
Yeah.
And I got to go. Okay, so euphoria means good bearing. So the river of good bearing. And another way of saying it is bearing of life. It's good bearing of life. It's living life fully. It's living the good life.
Yeah.
Right? So it's bearing life well.
Yep.
Euphoria River is the river of bearing life well. It's a flow. It's a promise and it's a process.
Yeah.
Okay. And when we can't tolerate being on the river, and being on the river means you feel your feelings, you tell the truth, there are neighbors on the river, there are people you're going to meet that help you, there are people that you meet that would try to drown you, there are people that you can share with, people you need to avoid, there are people you can be with, there are people you will raise up, there are people who will mentor you. In other words, you bring your hopes, your dreams. You have your sadness, your anger, your delight, your losses. You're living life on life's terms. Life is tragic. Sometimes the rapids go so fast, that people crash and they don't come back up.
Yeah.
Well, that is not a reason to stay off the river. That is life happening like we wish it wouldn't.
Yeah.
It's tragic. But see, the river is the only place left to go.
Yeah.
If you want to live, because it's where we experience God's faithfulness.
Yeah.
So we have this struggle called God is faithful and life is tragic. Mm-hmm. And there's a conflict between the two. And we ended the last podcast, you brought up Genesis 32, the story of Jacob. He gets a name change called no longer running away from life, but now fit to run into it.
Yeah.
And it means Jacob means to deceive himself, yep, others, and God. And he, through wrestling with God, he gets a name change, a blessing called Israel, which means to struggle with God and live.
Mm.
And it's in the struggle that we actually find life. And we have an ease of our misery, but a purpose in our suffering. We have an ease of our misery and a purpose in our suffering. Because if you can do sadness and let it take you where it's made to take you, you're fully alive.
Yeah.
If you can do hurt and let it take you to healing, you're fully alive, because that gives you courage to help others. Hurt people who heal help others. Hurt people who don't deal with hurt hurt others.
Mm.
Right? Hurt people who hide their hurt become resentful and defensive and vengeful and dangerous and isolated, and people want to avoid them. They're not in the river. Only hurt people can stay in the river.
Mm. Okay. As you're sharing, I feel like one of the things that's implicit that I want to make explicit that's been significantly impactful for me is the realization that this process we're talking about, life in the river, is all of life. I think a lot of times, very practically, people come to emotional health to kind of like figure this stuff out so they can get beyond it.
Yeah, not have to be in the river.
Not have to be in the river. Yeah. You know, it's almost like, how can I master? I think the most maybe non-charitable way to describe it is somebody saying, how do I figure out this emotional health stuff so I don't have to feel this way anymore? You know, so I don't have to feel like I'm, you know, a lot of times they come into it because it's like, oh, I'm in crisis, I'm overwhelmed, and I'm bouncing between anxiety and depression. I'm going to read this, you know, I'm going to read Voice of the Heart. This will give me some language. I can figure it out so I don't feel this way anymore. Yes. They're trying to turn it off. And actually, what we're trying to tell people is, actually, this is meant to usher you into a new way of living that'll be your way of living until you die if you're doing it right.
Yes, so well said. And see, it's not about, I'm going to have the feeling and then find a way to get rid of ever having the feeling again.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I'm going to have the feeling and receive the full benefits of what it's made to do, and that will prepare me to find the benefit of the feeling again when it happens again, because it's going to happen.
Right.
So life is going to keep being life until you're done.
Right.
So euphoria remember means to bear life well.
Right.
Now, the thing is, most people who stay in the river were actually at a loss to the point that they had nowhere else to go. Those are the people who know how to live in it best.
Right. Okay? Yeah, we don't opt into the river. We're just like, I had nowhere else to go.
Exactly. So this is, many of us are like cats. We hit water, we start running out.
Yeah. And that's connected to the previous episode, denial and dissociation.
Yes. And so if you don't do feelings, then you will do anxiety and depression.
Yep.
Okay. So anxiety, we call it hyperphoria. I'm going to escape to control versus being in living as we're made to have it. We escape to control, which is hyperphoria, anxiety driven.
Yep.
So we run away from the waters. We run away from the river, because to have feelings means to die.
Yeah.
Instead of feelings bring me to learning how to live.
Yeah.
Okay. And then when we go the other way, we find out I can't get control, because nobody gets control of life.
Right.
That's like most people want to do their feelings so they can become God versus do their feelings and be in need of God. So you and I can't figure out God, and we can't think our way into God. We can only present ourselves to God.
Yep.
I'll say that again. We can't think our way to God.
Yeah.
We can only present ourselves to God.
Right. Okay. And it's even just, I mean, it's coherent with the biblical reality that a lot of times we don't want to live in, that like God is not an equation to be solved or mastered.
Nope.
He is a person to enter into relationships
He's the omni-relational God, as well as omnipresent, omnipotent, and omniscient.
Omniscient.
See, those are conceptual, intellectual statements that are true,
right?
But they lead us into all kinds of intellectual debate. But when we describe God as the omni-relational God, he is all relational, then all of a sudden we're stumped.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know where to take this except to ask hard questions of God.
Yeah.
Oh, if you're so relational and you're so good and you so care, then where are you? I mean, what are you doing? And where's the good I was promised? And do you really do things specifically for individuals?
Yeah.
And do you do anything for me? And are you, yeah.
Which sounds a lot like the Psalms, which is, in my mind, the integration of what we're talking about, even in the process of not just being like some self-help thing that you made up. I mean, really, I feel like you're just, you've used the image before of just like almost going to the river and you, this is a different river, but you like look in the river and you see this thing and you pull it up. That's ancient, right? It's not, you didn't create it, you discovered it.
Exactly. I remember reading the book of Jeremiah. It's like, follow the ancient paths. This is ancient stuff. And the Psalms are literally the stories of people living in the river.
Right.
I mean, from grief, it one, is all the way to 10, celebration and everything in between.
Right.
It's Hebrew school. So, and it's beautiful. And they're called songs.
Mm.
And even the song I used from Johnny Swim was like, don't run from the process.
Yeah.
Don't let life rob you of that by not having the gifts given to you in your upbringing to stop you.
Yeah.
Come back to life on life's terms and find that there are others in it with you and there's a God who's for you.
Yeah.
That's real.
Yeah.
Because we're created to live fully in relationship with ourselves, others, and God.
Right.
With our hearts out, up against our sternums, not on our sleeves, in our sternums, so we can connect with other people. So anyway, so euphoria means to bear life well, which means that you have the internal experience. You can bring your internal experience to the external relationships and to God who created us to allow you to experience life on life's terms in the river, so you learn how to live fully. Mm-hmm. Love deeply and lead well. Let me talk about just for a minute, loving deeply, just for a minute. People who are hyperphoric.
Yeah, so this is escape, the bank. This is the bank of anxiety. Uh-huh.
They run to the bank and they just take off into the desert. The hyperphoric. They're anxiety driven. And then when the anxiety doesn't work, I can't get control of life, I become depressive.
Mm-hmm.
And depressive means I'm depressing the desire for life and desire and caring, so we escape to apathy.
Yep.
You try to get beyond feeling.
Right.
And anxiety, try to get control of feelings, depression, trying to get beyond feeling.
Yeah.
So escape to apathy or escape to control.
Mm-hmm.
Those are our options. What happens is that people get on a roller coaster. They go up and they go down. They go up. They splash through the river like, oh, my God, it's terrible. And they go into down, and down's going to kill us. We climb back up, and we just, I can't get control. Life keeps happening. I can't stop it. We go back down because we're trapped in an illusion that we're supposed to, or can get control of this thing called living, and we can't.
Right.
So we take eternity in our hearts instead of submitting it to the Psalms process. We try to get control of it so that we can either make it happen or we just give up on it.
Yeah.
Escape to hyperphoria or hypophoria.
Yeah.
Not, I mean, euphoria.
And I feel like this is some of the grounding. I've heard people talk about anxiety and depression being, you know, two sides of the same coin, or I've heard people use the illustration of, you know, anxiety is like a staircase that you're working way up that eventually you run out of stairs and you crash to the very bottom.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's funny because a lot of times they seem polar opposites of one another, but it's amazing the way that they feed into one another.
They're both about feelings. They're both about feelings. You know, and by the way, this is not judgment on anyone. Depression's a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
Anxiety disorders are real things. This is not, it's so simple. See, that's the figuring it out and then there's a quick solution. No, no, no. I mean, learning how to and returning to our feelings will not alleviate all of your anxiety.
Right.
Nor will it stop your natural inborn wishing to give up. I mean, because life is hard.
Yeah.
But see, ultimately, anxiety is running from our voices.
Mm.
It's running from my anger, running from my own voice, running from my own need of others and God I don't believe in to be with me in the midst of this helplessness returning to me. And the depressive tendency is running from caring, which is another way is running from my anger because I see my anger, my voice is useless.
Yeah.
So in both ways, it's still running from the voice of the heart.
Mm.
Now, I know it's sickness. Please hear me. Please hear me, guys. I know brains get broken. But before brains get broken, hearts get broken.
Mm.
Okay? So let's, please. I know we're in an era where we're finally talking about mental health, which I think is partially tragic because that's called fix-it health rather than emotional health, which means there's no fix, but we can live this extremely well.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There's no fix for pain because pain has
a purpose. We can be equipped to live life on life's terms, which is going to be wrestling, which is going to be struggle. And it is interesting, right? Because I think a lot of the clients that you work with, some that I work with, are people who got the very thing that a lot of people dream of, which is quote unquote, no more struggle, right? They make enough money in a job that is no longer as demanding as it once was. And on the other side of that typically is a lot of times misery, not like my wildest dreams came true. And then your track is like, where the heck do you go from there?
Yeah. And then, the completely impoverished materially, will often live in a fantasy that there's a place I can get to where I'll no longer have to struggle with life.
Right.
And it's not just materialism. Let me tell you, a roof over your head is a nice thing and food on the table is a good thing.
Right.
Okay. So I'm not diminishing that on any level. But like, let's look at how to, like, living fully, loving deeply, leading well. That's the ability to delight in the presence of another person out loud, to see someone you care about, and to take a risk of saying, oh my goodness, I'm so thrilled you're here. Mm. It's so great to see you. It's what every child looks for when they walk in the door, when the screen door hits the casing, and there's somebody inside that house that's going, you're home, and you're delighted in, and it feeds the heart.
Yeah.
So we're all hungry to be delighted in. We're all hungry to have a place to take our struggles and grief. I mean, that's where the needs of the heart, where we talked about the needs of the heart podcast, was so good at addressing that. But like living fully, like, you know, I mentioned to you earlier, I talked about my father on the other podcast, and he died in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so thankful to God that two men knew each other when he passed away. I had great respect for him and he had great respect for me.
Mm.
I never got to be as close as I wished because the river took the water on downstream. I mean, I missed it, you know, and he missed it. But that didn't mean love wasn't there or there's a great mutual respect and care. But I remember because we talked to each other as men. In other words, I got to the point where I could say what William said to me, kind of like, Dad, this is just platitudes and cliches. You're of no help.
Yeah.
I didn't quite be that loud about it like William could be, but it was still good. But we buried him on the 22nd of December. I asked that O Holy Night would be played, would be sung at his funeral because it's Christmas. It was his favorite hymn and one of mine. It's just, I just remember being down at a shop making Christmas gifts on Christmas night. Dark at night, Oh Holy Night comes on. I'm in my dad's shop. It's like having his arms around me, using all his tools and things, and picturing what these gifts are going to be like for people. But
how old were you when this was
happening? Oh gosh, I was like, working the shop. I was 19, you know, 20. December 24th, Christmas Eve, Sonia and I are sitting in the sanctuary doing Christmas Eve service. And Oh Holy Night came on. And I remember sitting there and I was like, oh God, I'm going to choke.
Hmm.
And because I'm able to live in the river and sometimes I want to run from it like crazy, I remember I began to choke up and I started to cry. And Sonia was so precious. I mean, I'm sitting there like with people around me and my chest is beginning to quiver and then shake, and she just kind of sat nearer. But then I began to picture, I had a picture like I could see my father, and he was in heaven, and he was standing at the fence, like this wrought iron fence, and he was had both of his hands on the bars, like not prison, but just the fence, and he was watching for me, and he and then I saw him. He said, "Son, it's okay." And this was one of the things, once he got into recovery, this is one of the things he repeated to all of us when, like, "Hey, hey, Dad, this is what's going on. You know, I'm 38 years old. I'm looking at this kind of thing." He said, "It's going to be okay, son." Or, "I'm going to go on vacation." He said, "Good. It's going to be okay." I mean, in other words, "Hey, guess what? I found something out. It's okay."
Yeah.
So he's standing at the fence and he looks at me, he says, "Son, it's okay. Like, I'm gone." And I know we missed it. And but we had a lot. And I went, I know. I said in my mind, I'm like, "I know." Almost said it out loud, "I know." And I'm starting to cry harder. And he says, "Son, really, it's okay." I'm like, "I know, I know." And he said it a third time. He goes, "Son, it's okay." And in that, I was like, "God, I know. I know." And I remember I was just weeping because I knew it'd be okay. But the okay was, "I'll see you again." And it's like, "I'll see you again." He goes, "Oh, you bet." And at that moment, what was amazing was in my mind's eye, he turned around. Like he was waiting so I could say goodbye. And "I'll see you again." But it was a goodbye and it's not over. And I'm letting everybody out there know, that's not fantasy.
Yeah.
This is us being connected to life on life's terms, and we have eternity in our hearts, and life on life's terms, it says it's over, but the eternity in our heart says it is not over and it never will be over. And you come into life like that, and that's God created. The man turned around, my father turned around, and he was not an emotionally open dude. He turned around and opened his arms up like mine are right now in absolute praise.
Yeah.
And walked away a very happy man. It's finished. So that's Euphoria River, meaning that face it, feel it, deal with it for the benefit of continuing to gain the experiences of life so that you have more to offer, you have more volume within you, you have more capacity, and therefore you have more capability to live life on life's terms. And we talked about reality, you know, the four realities. And so Euphoria River, you can't stay in the river unless you, number one, you have to face reality. Life is clumsy. The best we ever get is clumsy. It's going to be mistake ridden. Number two, life's terms. You're going to die. It's going to be difficult. And at the same time, the gravity is real. All right. It's just happening.
Yeah.
Three, that everything in life is practice. Doctors are practicing, lawyers are practicing, parents are practicing, people are practicing, and children especially need room to practice. And number four, it takes a lifetime to learn how to live. So those four things are contending with, they give us permission to be works in progress, but they're contending with four promises. You can't live in the river without promise.
Yeah.
If it's just all fatalism and guts and willpower, you've lost already.
Yeah, there's something more significant. The image that's coming to my mind is like in Colorado, you meet these people who are just looking for these, you know, it's almost like they would find pleasure opting into the pain of very dangerous, life-threatening situations, right? Like they're going to go backcountry skiing, getting as close to dying as possible because there's some sort of rush from it. You're talking about something that's much more safe and sacred than just...
I'm not talking about adrenaline addiction, which is skin addiction.
Right.
Right. You know, creating false scenarios of thrill.
Yeah. An addiction to pain or punishment. Yeah. It's like, this is...
No, this is about, we'll get to it and say, this is about empathy and compassion. This is about caring about other people. But so the four promises, we got reality, and the four promises are God is with us, Emmanuel. God never leaves or forsakes us. God goes ahead of us, and God makes us strong and courageous. In other words, the heart And the spirit within the heart infuses willpower, intellect, and morality with life.
Yeah.
See, we don't get rid of willpower. You got to be tough. You don't get rid of intellect. You got to be smart. You know, you got to think.
Right.
So this isn't getting rid of all that.
Yeah.
Okay, so thrill addiction. Our capacity for cruelty is boundless, mm-hmm. right? Agreed?
Mm-hmm.
Human beings.
Yeah.
And so our goodness begins with empathy.
Mm.
Empathy means in pain or in self-care. You don't go in the river unless you're looking for something and you found that it's not outside in the desert.
Yeah.
It's not outside the river. So you get into the river because you're hungry to be cared about and you're hungry to express your caring. In other words, you're returning to life as you're made to live it.
Yeah.
And as you learn how to live it, because some people showed compassion for you, because people reintroduced me to myself.
Yeah.
You were reintroduced to your own mm-hmm. heart. And that's why you love the voice heart. You went like, oh, yeah, I recognize this.
Yeah.
You've always known it.
Yeah. I mean, know it is, I mean, feel it is more accurate, to be honest. You know, it's like it doesn't even really make sense intellectually at first, but it feels true.
Yes. And that's why I'm saying, it's like, if it feels true, I'm not talking about going with your gut. I'm talking about listening to the bell ringing in your heart. If it feels true, that's called resonating.
Yes.
That's called intuitive.
Yeah.
That's called recognition. And you don't listen to me, but man, you better be listening to you. Because if the bell rings within, hear it ring.
Right.
And so as we go down the river, we get in the river for looking for life. We have others show us how to live life. And then we show others how to live life.
Yeah.
Empathy becomes compassion.
Yeah.
So our goodness is directly connected to our sameness and recognition. So the river, feel your feelings, tell the truth, give it to the process, which means give it to God, and struggle with God, which means sometimes you're going to really wonder, you're going to challenge God, like, what are you doing?
Yep.
And God goes, well, I'm not going to tell you right now, but I want you to know, it's going to be okay.
This is Genesis 32. Mm-hmm. This is the Psalms.
Mm-hmm.
This is Israel.
Yes. And Cain was instructed, you must master sin.
Mm.
Impossible. Mm. So Cain was offered not a command to get control of life. He was offered an opportunity to redepend upon how God created him and refused it. Mm. He went to the desert.
Yeah.
And he went out, way out into the desert, and built a city around his heart to protect himself from having to be in need.
Mm.
So in the river, you're going to be in need. You're going to have feelings. You're going to have stories. You're going to have sharing. You're going to have struggles. You're going to develop courage, confidence, competence, and be very curious of what's around the next bend.
Right. And, I mean, what's interesting to take the image even further that I think is applicable to real life is, right, on the bank of anxiety or hyperphoria, you feel like you can see that very clearly.
Yeah.
On the bank of depression or hypophoria, you think you can see that very clearly. The river feels scary, almost intolerable, because you know, I've heard you say this before. When we say river, we mean rushing river. What we don't mean is calm little, don't think like lazy river with your friends.
Yeah.
You know,
and sometimes it is. It's slow moving and wonderful. Sure. And you tie your rafts up together and kind of float together. You tie up at the bank where the shade is.
Yeah.
But you got to watch for snakes.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's rapids, but it's moving.
But it's
always moving.
Always and a lot of times you're like, okay, I'm going to step here. Is this glass or is this sand?
Uh-huh.
Right. And I don't know. I don't know until I try.
Mm-hmm.
But I have the skills.
Yeah.
That if it is glass, to be okay.
Yep.
And if it is sand, to rejoice.
Yes.
And to continue to work that way. Yes. And to say that experience of the unknown, of the struggle, of the questions, of the clumsiness is not only more desirable, but is where flourishing, thriving is found.
Absolutely.
Because it is impossible on the banks, as tempestuous as the sirens in those places seem to be.
Yes, we can rest on the water when it's slow, and sooner or later the rapids end, and we get our breaks and take them while you got them. So that's another thing. We'll get into the discipline of freedom or discipline of restoration, and let's also do Johari's window too, because those are the the movements of being known. So because on the river, you got to get known because you can't do life by yourself.
Right.
Impossible. We're not made for that isolation.
Right.
But the beauty of the river is that as we develop trust in the process, we develop faith in the process.
Yeah.
And God owns the process.
Right.
We're developing faith in God.
Right.
Which means we'll always take the risk of hoping.
Yep.
And hope always takes us to fear.
Yeah.
And fear always can take us to feeling.
Yeah.
And feeling can always take us to needing, desiring, longing, and hoping that we can be met in it. So there's a teleology, a circular teleology rolling towards a destination.
Yeah.
The river of feeling your feelings, telling the truth, and giving it through the process with the promises in it, we're works in progress, we will become portable sanctuaries.
Yeah.
We literally become a place to come to.
I like that as the next episode, by the way. I think portable sanctuaries to give an end and really elaborate on what that means, I think.
And it's paradoxical because the portable sanctuary literally takes us into the cracking of the acorn to become an oak tree. And it ushers us into the Beatitudes.
Yeah.
See, we have made such a mistake. Like this lady said to me yesterday, brilliant woman, brilliant person. Your description of the river, I just hear you saying it just means let go and just let it happen. It's like, gosh, no.
Yep.
You better learn how to use a paddle.
Yeah.
You better learn how to row the rapids.
Yeah, I like that.
Because it's coming.
Right.
Versus you having control, you're giving up control to have empowerment.
Right. Yeah, I'm actually looking at the image of one of the times I've heard you talk through this. And so, you know, it's like, okay, so if the bank north is anxiety, an escape to action, if the bank south is depression, escape to apathy, in the river.
Escape to control, not action, but just because actions, we do a lot of action on the river.
Oh, interesting.
You just said escape.
Oh, for the anxiety, yeah. So escape to control, not action.
Yeah.
I see. Okay. So north bank anxiety, escape to control, south bank depression, escape to apathy. In the river, some of the words I've heard you use to describe this are desire, glad, fear, replenishment, pain, celebration, hurt, shame, hope, grief, lonely, longings.
Yeah.
That's the stuff of real life.
It is. And that's where all the songs come from.
Yeah.
I mean, Johnny Swim, Adelaide, Adele, Andy Williams, The Impossible Dream, The Shy Lights, The Temptations. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
All the songs come from the river.
Yeah. And I've heard you say too about this, this is probably a good place for us to land for this one is you, because I think it sets up the next conversation about being a portable sanctuary. I've heard you say arrival is something you are always doing.
Yes. Oh, that's right. Awaken, acquire, arrive, and we never do.
Yeah.
Because if you're living and you have hope, you become better and better able to be a place somebody can come to get the learning of living that they don't know how to do. Because, man, I mean, every decade is a new place you haven't been before.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so guess what? You got to learn how to do it.
Yeah.
And that's the great tragedy of my age group in a lot of ways, is that a lot of younger people aren't coming to us.
Right.
One, because of their pride, but two, because of our failure. We didn't bring heart. We brought figuring.
Yeah.
And then we bring blame. And it's not okay.
And it makes me think some too. As soon as you figured it out, life is so dynamic to the point of the continuation of the image of the illustration of a river, right? A river is dynamic. It's never the same twice.
Right.
Same with life, right? It's like as soon as you've, you know, to make this as practical as possible, you know, it's like as soon as you've quote unquote figured, I know that's not the right, I'm kind of intentionally,
I get what you're saying. Yeah.
Like as soon as you figured out, for example, I know how to do this in the stage of life that I'm in.
Yes.
A kid moves from early childhood into teenage years and it's like, whoa, we were not, this is different than it was before. So, I mean, even if it's like, even if, it's one of the things I taught about in Denver. As soon as we think, as soon as life is always changing, and as soon as we figured it out, it changes again.
Yes, you put your hand in the river, you lift it out, put it back in. It's not the same river.
Exactly.
It moved on.
And so I think that to your point of.
So we, therefore, we need to stay in it.
Right. And yeah. to your point of that we're always arriving, mm-hmm. it, I think it illustrates that reality of like, even if you've arrived with four kids from, you know, a certain age bracket, all of a sudden you got four kids who are teenagers and uh-huh. it's like, welcome to arrive, trying to arrive uh-huh. again. I imagine that's, uh-huh.
That's so good. It reminds me too, Brian, that we really need to be good at hello. You know, because hello is the greeting of being together and saying I care. And we need to be good at goodbye, which is yeah. the greeting of saying hello again, but also hello to an ending
yeah.
and letting it be an ending. And if you can't do feelings, you can't do hello, goodbye. Mm. You can't be in relationship. You can't do grief. You can't do celebration. I mean, it's just like you're going to miss life.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, feelings.
Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah.
Either you do your feelings or you'll get sick with running from them or people will get sick of you.
Yeah.
And then there's also a group of people who know their stories and the feelings that go with it. They're adding to life.
Yeah.
And they're multiplying life
yeah.
versus subtracting and dividing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's great.
Okay.
Euphoria River, bear life well.
Yeah.
And it takes a lifetime. I wish I had answers. I'm just getting better questions. God bless you, man. All Thank right. you.
Sounds good.